accession number 21564, reel 40.
Colonel Cormac, reel 14. I think you were saying that Archbishop Makarios had some integrity and character, but many of the others who came up through the AOKA organisation did not.
Yes, he had a considerable ability to manage things. He was, I think, a fairly devious sort of character. But once he had got more or less what he wanted, I think he would have pursued that and tried to make it work. He had charisma. He had all the things going for a leader of a country who had been imprisoned and exiled. It seemed to be a traditional sort of route to power. But as I was saying, the people he had to handle and work with were not always very reliable. And he had his difficulties, certainly, well, not long after I left, there were the coup you mentioned, Samson, the most unreliable and vicious of his colleagues with the AOKA, came to grief running a coup against him. So those were inherent difficulties in the situation. When Makarios came to power in a political sort of way and the troubles died down, we changed tack completely. Instead of being spread all over the island, the agreement was that we would occupy two sovereign base areas, one based on Limassol Akrotiri Airport and the other in the east part of Cyprus, Decalia, south of Famagusta. And so the sapper, as the numbers required of troops required fell, the sapper regiment disbanded and left one squadron behind as an independent field squadron, and I moved into that one, and then we moved from Limassol across to Decalia. And there we spent the next year developing our own camp and engaged in more or less semi-peacetime occupation. We reverted to peacetime working hours. I mean, throughout the emergency, we had worked in operationally 24 hours a day. When it became clear that we were going to have, we hoped, a stable period in our base areas, then we reverted to the early start, break for tiffin, and then finishing at 1 o'clock when we were free to go and enjoy the island. And that year and the bit afterwards, we got a chance to explore the island peacefully, very attractive island, and enjoy it, and families and friends came out to visit, and it became almost a peacetime situation. There was still a bit of uncertainty, but we could go to any beaches we liked. We didn't have to swim behind barbed wire and armed guards. That changed, and it was really very nice.
When you say develop, I mean, what were you having to do to make?
Well, the camp was
Decalia.
there was all facilities that to be built there. Swimming pool to be built and improved. Our own accommodation required a lot to be desired, and all the ancillaries of a peacetime station had to be improved or developed and improved, and that kept us fairly busy. And then routine training. You had to keep on training your sappers to upgrade them as combat engineers, give them the opportunity to go back to UK for trade training. You slipped into that sort of routine, and we weren't so concerned. We weren't at all concerned with searching or patrolling. We were free to roam around the island in a sensible way and enjoy it.
In that phase, what sort of relations did you have with the Cypriots?
Well, it was quite good. We had local Cypriot high commissioners in Famagusta and Limassol. I think there was one in Nicosia too, but I was mostly concerned with Limassol and Famagusta. And they were high-grade civil servants. One was the one in Limassol was a Turkish Cypriot, a Greek Cypriot, and the one in Famagusta was a Turkish Cypriot, who later came down to Western Cyprus. And we worked with them, and for example, there were all sorts of projects that could be done, improvements to communications for isolated villages, places that were dependent on the burgeoning Cyprus wine industry, which had always been there, but this was a chance for them to improve the roads so they could bring their grapes down to the wineries and so on. So a lot of civil engineering projects like that developed and sprang up, which were interesting and professionally, you know, worthwhile. And during that year, we took up again our idea of going across to North Africa, to Libya in particular, for our training in desert living, desert navigation, desert survival, which was a very enjoyable project, which it took a lot of planning, because we had to send all our vehicles across by Z-craft, across from Cyprus to Tripoli in Libya, and then we flew across the main body, and then we formed up and moved down to an old Italian fort at Tarhuna as our base, and then we spread out through the desert on exercise, learning navigation, use of the sun compass, using the sextant, finding your position, looking for water, mapping, and generally surviving in the desert.
How long were you there on that?
It was about 6 weeks, that sort of exercise.
Who was actually instructing you on these arts?
We did it ourselves. We had got our own sort of standing orders on desert survival and navigation, which had been written up in the past, and we updated those. That was based on experience gained by long-range desert group, people in North Africa, elsewhere, a distillation of their wisdom. And it was really very enjoyable. And Tripoli in those days was a marvelous place to have some leave at the end of it.
At the time, well, at the beginning of your time in Cyprus, 1958, there was a certain amount of tension, political tension in Libya, and there were apprehensions there might be an attempt at a coup d'etat. Did you detect anything of that?
Not in our time, no. King Idris was, we thought, reasonably popular. He was certainly popular with us. We were made welcome. And Idris himself had said to the Italians who elected to stay behind after Mussolini had lost his North African empire, he said, if you want to stay, you'll be very welcome. Your expertise is very much valuable to us. Because a lot of the infrastructure had been built by the Italians, the roads, so on. And a lot of the restaurants and hotels were run by Italians. There was a nice casino in Tripoli, which was very popular. And a few who stayed behind did very well. And there was a nice little hotel opposite Tarhuna, pretty rough one, but we used to go across there for lovely Italian meals and good wine. And we remember the very high standard of living in Tripoli. I had no personal indication that things were going wrong, but it was only a year or two afterwards that Gaddafi booted out King Idris and the whole thing changed. But it was a very nice station. And we had time to go and explore the ancient Roman ruins at Leptis Magna, for example, and those further on the coast, there were other equally famous ruins, and we had time at intervals in our train to go and explore those. And it was altogether a very, very pleasant spot and a very interesting form of training.
You said you were in an old Italian fort at Tarhuna. What sort of fort was that? Was it like Fort Sahara?
It was very much a Bourges type fort.
Fort Zinderneuf.
Yeah. Slightly bigger, but it had the same feeling about it. And we had to, the local works people in Libya, in Tripolitania as we were, they had to come down and string up electric lighting and make sure it was habitable. It was rough and ready, but it was a good solid structure. And we settled in there very well. And as they moved out from there, many of our people got the bug for exploration. Desert navigation led to exploration. And two of our young officers excelled in that. One was a chap called John Blashford Snell, of whom you may have heard, who had already shown a penchant for travel widely and adventurously and exploration. He really got the bug there and went on to greater things, as you know. And the other young man was David Hall. I think he's a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society, who did a lot of very solid exploration there and became a figure in the RGS. Well, they picked it up, I think, there, combined with a natural inclination to that way of life. That was a rather nice development.
Did the soldiers, the sappers, take to desert conditions?
I think both of them enjoyed it. It was a complete change from Cyprus. It was doing something different. It was a limited period of time, and there was time for fun. And after the stresses and strains of the internal security situation in Cyprus for the previous years, this was a very welcome return to normality, and the change from one added to that. We also did exercises there in combination with people from Malta. The Royal Malta Artillery came across and joined us in North Africa, and there was a sapper commando unit, a beach commando, I think it was, can't remember the exact title, but they came across and joined us, and they were umpires in our various exercises, and we got to know them.
What impression did you get of the Malta Artillery?
Terribly British. In that sense, they were plus catholique du pape. Their mess was so like a pre-war British mess, it was hardly true. A cross between a very good mess in Britain and an Indian Army mess. They were absolutely puckered, to put it that way, and they made a point of it. It was almost like a caricature in some ways. But they were very keen. Their soldiering was really rather like Territorial Army soldiering. But they were just so anxious to be precisely correct and proper. It was something like a caricature. But it was interesting to be with them.
I think you were also GSO 3 INT at Headquarters Cyprus. How did you get that appointment?
Well, I really don't know, but having done 2 years as a second in command
of squadrons,
mm-hmm. I think it was time someone else had a chance to be second in command on the way through, and a job came up, and I was asked would I like to go to Western Cyprus, and I hadn't had a staff job as such before, because I had slightly bad luck. I'd passed the exam for staff college. In my year, 48 sappers passed, and there were 18 vacancies. And
so
I didn't get one.
You weren't sent.
So, I mean, I had that behind me, and then someone said, I think I had an idea that SQ was about to come in. There was a way out, but you had to have staff experience. And so I think the chief engineer of Cyprus thought this would be a good move for me. And so I duly went down to Western Cyprus, the Western area, and I was G3 intelligence there. That was my official appointment, and I did most of the intelligence work, but I also worked as assistant to the G2 operations and training, and did a lot of running of exercises and so on. So it was a mixed job, but mostly I was working very closely with the intelligence corps company there and the staff at HQ, nearer office it became at Episcopi.
What were your main concerns when you were doing your intelligence work in this staff appointment?
What was going on then was that the troubles were brewing very much between the Greeks and Turks again. It had come much more out in the open. And instead of shooting at us, they were shooting at each other. And we clearly needed to know what was happening and how it would affect us. Would they combine and turn against us, or would the Turks again look to us for protection outside the sovereign base areas? And it was a clear case of wanting to know or needing to know what was going on. We had an area security committee, which consisted of my commander, Brigadier Dougie Locke, and a chap from headquarters, Neil Elf, in the intelligence side, and the local high commissioner for the Akrotiri sovereign base area, who happened to be my old friend Mufkizadi from Famagusta, who was the Turkish high commissioner there. And that group was the area security committee, and my job was A, to brief them as necessary, and B, secretary of the meeting, and took all the minutes so I would know what was going on, so would they. And that was how we coordinated the security an intelligence gathering side there.
What were the sources of intelligence about what was going on, and what were the intentions of the Greek and Turkish?
Well, again, I had to rely a lot on the security company, who'd been there all the time, although the people had turned over. And that was quite a big company. There was the residue of quite an intelligence network about, which had never been disbanded. And so you got reports from people in Limassol and roundabout and other parts. And we just kept our ears and eyes open that way.
Did you know who these informants were, or were there cutouts to assure their anonymity?
I wouldn't know who they were at all, no.
Who was handling them? Were there handlers in the Intelligence Corps company then?
I that's what I suspect, yes.
Do you have any idea of the sort of rough division of labour between the Special Branch and the INT Corps?
No, because we lost all touch with the Cyprus police, you see. That was outside our area.
So they'd gone?
They had gone from the sovereign base areas. Mm. The Palestine police, the Cyprus police, had been disbanded. Mm. And then the Cypriots formed their own police.
Yes.
It wore, to all extents and purposes, the same uniforms and the same police stations they had before.
Probably the same people too.
And a lot of the same people. Mm. But they ran their own show. And there was clearly a liaison between them as a matter of courtesy. But the direct liaison had thinned out pretty dramatically.
Mm. Were you concerned with the stance being taken by the government in Athens and the governments in Ankara? Were you interested in what possible courses of action open to the Greek and Turkish governments were? Was that part of your rubric?
No, it was something we were aware of, but it was far removed from our day-to-day concerns. Mm. About possible trouble and what might happen and how it would affect us. And our area security committee meeting, those minutes went up to HQ near Elf. Mm. They had a representative on the committee anyway. And that was the extent of our remit, to make sure that. But we were doing so many other things as well. Exercises, training, because Cyprus suddenly became a great training ground. And we had to coordinate all the training of units coming in from UK to train in Western Cyprus, which was ideal country.
So you're saying that you worked with the G2 Ops in arranging training exercises. What sort of operations were they practicing on these exercises?
Well, pretty standard tactical operations in a mountainous area. And then on the Akamas Peninsula, which is the top left of Cyprus, that bit that sticks up, was our naval firing range, which was also under our control. And we had certain... The treaty giving us the sovereign base areas had allocated us training areas, which we could use so many days of the year. And we would get people from the parachute brigade coming in, and they would meet up with local units, and we would write exercises for them, for which we would be directing staff and watching what happened. And occasionally, simply because I happened to be a sapper, I could organize some battle simulation at appropriate times and appropriate places. We got involved in so many different things. There was at that time a sense possibly of permanence. Local tourist agents said, "Can you help us?" Because they knew that the sappers did projects which would be aid to the civil community. And a local tourist board, I remember up at Polis near Akama, said if we had a track built in here, the tourists would get up to Aphrodite's Well, which is a popular space, a popular place for visitors, if they could get there. Mm. And we went up and recce'd that and wrote reports, and the local tourist board gave us a huge Cypriot barbecue and that sort of thing, and operations that were ideal for sappers to do practical work.
To aid to the civil authorities
And civil community, really.
Civil community, yes.
And I know the squadron, the field squadron, when I was there, when I left, were much involved in building the first ski lift in Cyprus up Mount Troodos. All these things were going on. And then there was a leave camp at Troodos, which we weren't directly responsible for, but it was a good place for us to go up for holidays. And I took Beverly and the family up there once. Well, it was a great mixture of jobs, but the basis of my thing was with G3 intelligence. The others spun off.
When you were helping with the exercises, did the in these exercises, when units came out into the mountainous area, were they doing all the phases of war?
Yes, advance to contact, yes, and attacks and token defence and so on, yes. Yeah. It was just like an ordinary exercise you'd have in Salisbury Plain or Saw Tower training area, but it was in the Cyprus context with the geography and the terrain applicable there.
But were you the only member of that staff concerned directly with intelligence?
Yes, that's right, with the Western area, Sam. Because we had, the Cyprus was just split into two, and it just so happened that headquarters of the whole Near Elf was in Episcopi, which was in our area.
Yes.
So we were sitting in a small headquarters,
far away. District headquarters, yes. And they were the headquarters.
They were
the
in our
island.
District, yes. But they ran the whole thing.
Yes.
So that was why it was so important for us to be close together in that for that aspect. Mm. But they were responsible for Aden. And other parts as well.
Yes, because, I mean, Cyprus, once we'd lost the canal zone, Cyprus became
the base.
A base for operations all around the Eastern Mediterranean and the Middle East. Yeah. Did you get drawn into intelligence work for contingency plans for intervention in those areas?
No, our concern was simply Western Cyprus.
Just the area of Western
just
Cyprus.
Just the area.
Did that include the listening station on Troodos?
That was there. It didn't include the other installation, which was slightly in the other half. Mm. That was a very important place. Mm. Yes, we knew they were there, but their operations were very much under wraps.
So they weren't. You had nothing to do with administering them or handling their material.
That was kept quite separate. Mm-hmm. Near Elf were very much more closely informed than we were.
Yes.
Neat to know it didn't affect. Mm. They were really the whole of the Middle East that they were listening to.
Did you ever hear of a scheme called Mantelpiece while you were in Cyprus?
Don't think so. I can't remember it. No.
It was a scheme for the pre-positioning of equipment in case forces had to fly in for intervention purposes and use Cyprus as a base. So the idea was that they would arrive quickly by air, get themselves kitted out on Cyprus from stocks, and then they'd go to wherever they were going to be deployed for the actual operational purpose.
I don't recall the name, but I was directly involved in one specific operation like that, which was in 1961, was the saber rattling by Iraq and threatening to invade Kuwait. And that's exactly what we did. I was dispatched to RAF Akrotiri Station, and I set up a small cell, which the RAF gave me at the base headquarters. And what I had to do was I got signals from MOD London saying that so many planes were coming in and that the packs load and the freight load was so much and so much. And I had to... It was within my brief and consulting headquarters, would arrange for the unit to come off the plane at Akrotiri, which they knew was going to happen, and then arrange for them to go into a barracks in Polymedia or Episcopi, and, for example, two para, I think it was, who were there, were acclimatized, would then go on the planes and fly on to Kuwait. So we had a lot to do just like that.
Sounds more like AQ work than G or INT.
It was AQ movement, yes.
Movement, it was
operational, they said, and that I was the chap who was sent down to do it with my Sergeant Clark and I think one other chap, and that was we worked in a little cell there, and it was great fun being with the RAF, and it was really pulling people off planes, putting seasoned troops on, getting the others acclimatized, and then sending them on, making sure that the right balance went forward, that sappers, there were surveyors were sent out there to help arrange this defensive perimeter. All the air support came from Cyprus.
Did any of your sappers or sappers from your old field company go out on that particular operation?
I can't really remember now. It was
because they would have been acclimatized, wouldn't they, having been out there in Cyprus?
Yes, and there were survey sappers out in Cyprus too who went out.
Yes,
Postal sappers went out there, all sorts. It was a very hectic period, and all I can remember is being extremely short of sleep for a week or two when I was down there. But a little sideline, 1961, threat of Kuwait intervened, and we had our forward troops just on the border of Kuwait where they thought the threat might come. The RAF, who were doing recces to provide air support, found it very difficult to pinpoint where our troops were in relation to the geography of the place, because the maps weren't all that brilliant. And the sappers who went out there devised a very simple system. They painted on the ground 6 or 8 figure grid references in huge white numbers, so the plane flying over it could say, ah, that's it, therefore there must be so much.
I mean, they weren't gridding the map, they were gridding the ground.
Yeah. Well, but the maps weren't terribly brilliant, and it was the idea was important not to have what we now call blue-on-blue attacks, that if they were going to hit something, it would be the opposition. And to do that, they needed landmarks, clearly defined positions, which were not easy to find. Now, 30 years later, the troops out there were equipped with global position finding systems, satellite navigation. And I just reflected often when I heard that, how things had changed. Instead of having to laboriously paint huge grid numbers on the ground, they had all these GPS systems.
But they still got blue-on-blue incidents, so perhaps the painting on the ground might have been a better method.
Well, I wouldn't like to comment on that. But it was just a little sideline reflection of how things had changed technically. But that was a very interesting little job. And then, of course, it all blew over. The Iraqis didn't attack. They gave up. The threat was too much for them in those days. It was only a brigade group that was sent out anyway.
But it was a gesture, wasn't it?
It was a gesture.
Form of military diplomacy, yeah. You might say.
But for our little cog in the wheel, it was quite a hectic time, sorting the signals, getting them in on teleprinters and working out what we had to do and telling people what we think and then getting instructions and moving people here, then getting the planes refueled. That wasn't my job, but getting them loaded again with the right mixture of packs and freight so they could operate at the far end. That was all part of that rather interesting and slightly hectic year, in my third and last year in Cyprus.
Sounds like you had a very varied experience of staff work, even though you were in theory in one appointment, you were doing all sorts of different jobs. Did you find staff work came to you easily, or was it something that was...
It was just another job. It didn't occur to me that to be it was anything very difficult. Once I knew what my commander required, and it started off with the minutes of these meetings.
Yes.
He had to, they would finish at a certain time. He had to have them by close of play, all typed out. And then he would go through them and correct them as he thought ought to be done. Then they were retyped and sent out. So I quickly developed a system. I had my sergeant clerk, and I had a very nice lady shorthand typist. And then she was drilled to be waiting, and she might be late, that I would come back to the office and I would simply look at my notes and dictate, as I'm doing now, stream of consciousness out, and then she would type it out, and she knew the format, the headings, because it was a standard layout, take them to my brigadier, who would say, he didn't say that, or he meant to say that, but and then these little alterations, and it was done.
Be corrected, so. Yes.
And that was a simple drill, and then the occasional helped my G2, who was a great friend of mine anyway, on operational training, the exercise directives and instructions, and do this and do that and so on, and one got used to it. It was very interesting. I was very glad to have done that, because when it came up later on to qualifying for SQ, that was a very vital thing.
A useful experience in itself.
In itself, it was just great fun.
See a higher headquarters actually in action.
Yeah. And it was good. A nice bunch. And that really ran out my time in Cyprus.